Our second epistle reading for this Sunday comes from the book of 1 John, reading from the fourth chapter. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. No one has ever seen God. If we love one another, God lives in us, and God's love is perfected in us. By this we know that we abide in him and he in us, because he has given us of his Spirit. So we have known and believed the love that God has for us. God is love, and those who abide in love abide in God, and God abides in them. Love has been perfected among us in this, that we may have boldness on the day of judgment, because as he is, so are we in this world. There is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. For fear has to do with punishment, and whoever fears has not reached perfection in love. We love because God first loved us. Those who say, I love God, and hate their brothers or sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. The commandment we have from him is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also. May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. The number seven has a very deep and spiritual meaning in the Bible. From the creation stories in the very first pages of the Hebrew Bible, which we Christians call the Old Testament, to the last pages in the New Testament, the number seven was used to represent completeness, even perfection, both physically and spiritually. Well, perhaps you've noticed that this is the seventh sermon in the series Connecting with God. And while not a complete consideration of this topic, and certainly not a perfect one, it is nonetheless the final sermon to complete this series on spiritual formation. And over the weeks, starting way back on June 21st, we have worked to expand our understanding of what it means to connect with God, to actually experience the presence of God in our midst. And for structure in this series of sermons, I've focused on a different chapter title each week from the book The Rebirthing of God, Christianity's Struggle for New Beginnings by John Philip Newell. And I again encourage you to buy and read this remarkable book. Newell, as a reminder, is an ordained Church of Scotland minister, a scholar in the field of Celtic spirituality, and a former warden of Iona Abbey in Scotland, where I spent a week in May during my sabbatical. And in this book, and throughout his work in the field of spirituality, Newell proposes that we can move toward a connection with God not by searching for something from without ourselves, but rather by reaching deep within to connect with the sacred presence that dwells within all of creation. And we accomplish that, he suggests, by reconnecting. So we have talked about reconnecting with the earth, with compassion, with the light, with the journey, with spiritual practice, with nonviolence. And this week's topic, reconnecting with love. How is the rebirthing of God in you and me and within the life of this congregation experienced through a reconnection with love, which is a term that is almost indefinable? After all, even the great Swiss psychiatrist and psychotherapist Carl Jung said of the mystery of love, "I have never been able to explain what it is." But Jung did say that the Apostle Paul came close when he wrote to the church in Corinth, "Love bears all things and endures all things." In chapter 13 of 1 Corinthians, often called the love chapter in the Bible, Paul poetically states what has been used at countless marriage ceremonies. Even though he was addressing the love that should be demonstrated by those within a community of faith, not specifically the love between two people in marriage. Love is patient. Love is kind. Love is not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It does not insist on its own way. It is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. We are to understand that when we connect with others with that kind of love, that we are connecting with God. Now, you often hear progressives say that what you believe isn't as important as how you put what you believe into action. And that, of course, is a very good corrective to strict orthodox dogma. However, when it comes to spirituality, what you believe about the nature and character of God is of paramount importance in how you personally experience the presence of God. And that's why so many of us are drawn to the New Testament book of 1 John. Let me repeat part of that passage. Beloved, let us love one another, because love is from God. Everyone who loves is born of God and knows God. Whoever does not love does not know God, for God is love. Beloved, since God loved us so much, we also ought to love one another. If we love one another, God lives in us, and God's love is perfected in us. God is love. Love is God. Therefore, there can be no rebirthing of God within us without us reconnecting with love. And while I know of no Christians who would disagree with that statement, a large segment of Christianity has chosen nonetheless to focus on an understanding of the nature and character of God as judgmental, condemning, and even needy. This is an unfortunate consequence, for example, of taking the traditional doctrine of substitutionary atonement literally. An obsession with personal salvation, when tied to this particular ancient doctrine, assumes that there is a price that is needed to be paid for God's forgiveness. And that price was the death of Jesus. The doctrine states that although a payment needed to be made to make us right with God, we are not worthy to make that payment ourselves. Therefore, a substitute sacrifice was needed. God, in the form of a perfect Jesus, died on our behalf to appease an offended God. Does anyone else have a problem with a God that can't or won't forgive unless blood is spilled? Some suggest that's simply a leftover from ancient mythology. And doesn't that seem to run counter to our own deepest understanding and experiences of love? Newell writes, "Who are the people who have most loved us in our lives amid our failures and betrayals? Could we imagine them ever requiring payment to forgive us? True love is free. Perhaps so much wrong has been done by this doctrine that the cross itself has become an irredeemable symbol for many. Well, if that is the case, then we need to work hard to redeem an understanding of the cross. Essentially, the cross is a symbol of the mystery at the heart of Christianity's great gift to the world, the belief that love can reconcile all things." And drawing on her Jewish heritage, 20th century French philosopher, mystic, and social activist Simone Weil, I believe it's pronounced, said, "The universe is an expression of love, and everything in the universe is essentially a means to love." Think of the implications. Noah poetically writes, "The rising sun is a means to love. The glow of the moon at night is a means to love. Every life form, the shape of the weeping willow by the distant pond, the sound of the robin in the tree, the light in the eyes of every creature, all these are a means to love." And he continues, "I am a means to love, as are you, your children, even your nation." Do we know that? Do we know that this is our sacred role in the world? Well, when we become aware of what is deepest in the heart of the other is a resonance, a living vibration of the sacred, whether it be in a tree or another plant, a wild creature or another human being, we find ourselves wanting to be in relationship. We find that our heart is drawn to the heart of the other. So where is the sacred to be found? In the body of the earth, in our human bodies, and in the body of our communities and nations. This is what it means to understand that all of creation is not only made by God, it is made of God. And I think the words in 1 John 4:19 through 21 are true. We love because God first loved us. Doesn't sound like a God who needs a sacrifice in order to make things right. It continues. Those who say, "I love God," and hate their brothers and sisters are liars. For those who do not love a brother or sister whom they have seen cannot love God whom they have not seen. The commandment we have from him is this: those who love God must love their brothers and sisters also. I'm going back to my sermon a few weeks ago when I reflected on the Say No to Hate campaign here in Tulsa. We're giving a very strong directive not to fall into the trap of automatically categorizing and demonizing those with whom have different opinions and ideas from ourselves as haters. As I mentioned, sometimes it's a fine line between being hated and becoming a hater in return. This, we are commanded, must not be part of our lives as followers of Jesus. So Celtic spirituality sees the nature and character of God more as a sacred presence that dwells within all of creation, more than as an almighty being out there somewhere. And this leads to a much more tolerant and accepting understanding that God is not confined to any particular religious tradition or practice or sacrament. Christianity, for the most part, throughout its history, has not been able to humble itself enough to realize that reality. Martin Buber, who lived from 1868 to 1965, who was a great Jewish philosopher and theologian, said, "I do not believe in Jesus, but I do believe with Jesus." So Newell concludes, what if Christianity had gotten that one right? What if we had realized long ago that the important thing is not getting the world to believe what we believe, getting others to subscribe to particular beliefs about Jesus. The important thing is inviting the world to believe with Jesus, to believe in the way of love. Progressive Christianity, at least in my opinion, is starting to get this right. And this radical approach to a life of faith suggests then, and this is heretical, that calling oneself a Christian isn't ultimately what matters. What matters is whether you and I believe and love. What matters is whether with Jesus we are following the way of love, for that is all we need. So to quote those wonderful theologians, John, Paul, George, and Ringo, All you need is love. We are made, you and I, we are made as a means to love. It is God-given. And the question is whether we will live what we already truly are, and that's love. Let me conclude this entire sermon series with a sentence that I think perhaps best summarizes the Celtic way of life. I shared it last Sunday. What is deepest in us and deepest in all of creation is not opposed to God, but rather is of God. Taking this to heart is how God is reborn in us. Reconnecting with the sacredness of the earth, reclaiming the way of compassion, seeing the light in all things, a recommitment to the journey and with other faiths, a rediscovery of spiritual practice, a rededication to nonviolence, and above all else, a reuniting to love. Hopefully this series of sermons has broadened your own understanding of what it means to connect with God and a broader understanding of spiritual formation. And perhaps it has even been affirming that you have been connecting with God all along, more than you ever realized. Amen.